This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora te whānau. Welcome back to Recuperate, formerly known as...
Hot Waffle.
Not really being used, so here we are, back again after a short hiatus where Lucy made an excuse where we went on air and I think Michael bought it.
It was Golden Shears.
Oh, it was.
And I
it
got
was a very busy time.
Caught
was consumed
up.
In the passion of wool handling.
Well, I've
and
never
wool sharing.
I was and wool pressing.
Yes.
Gosh.
And other wool related matters.
So much wool and
so much fun.
So much fun
and a intense sport.
Very intense.
Yeah.
Very.
Well, I'm
intense.
Glad you found the delights of it.
I did. I've got to say. So I went every day, and then I preferred the atmosphere leading up to the big night, not the big night itself. The atmosphere on the big night, I mean, it was still cool, but it was way busier. I was probably feeling a little bit menopausal.
Yeah.
Couldn't really do the crowds. And also wasn't feeling very confident. So, you know, I had crushing. I felt, you know, I just wanted to hide. And I had to be out there taking photographs and trying to find interviews. But I found the other nights, so Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, they were just cool. It was just a cool vibe.
Yeah.
Still quite busy. I got to speak to some really nice people, a lot of sheep. But it's in the same hall that I do pickleball in, right?
All right.
So I went back to pickleball last night and it was hard to equate. I couldn't believe they were the same building.
Oh, the tension, the electric and the atmosphere.
Yeah. And how busy it was in there.
The sweat.
The shit. The smell.
You almost said something else then.
I did.
Sweat and the pheromones and the.
Yeah.
Lanolin.
So much lanolin.
Yeah, so much. Nice.
It was
very good reporting. You got some good stories. And you talked to a lot of international competitors.
I did. The Isle of Man people were my favourites. Up in the media room, there was the lovely man, David, from the Basque Country, and he was their videographer because he was filing video and interviews from every night to Basque TV.
Wow.
Like, to the main news. It was big news over in Basque Country. And they had actually formed quite a cool alliance with they'd met some local Māori and had actually had some really good conversations about how the cultural and language revival of the Basque was quite similar to Te Reo Māori and, you know, and the cultural revival of Māori Dermot and all that. So they'd had some really cool kind of cross-cultural conversations.
Yeah.
Of which I, you know, I'm only telling you third hand. But it was really nice that those kind of connections were made and these kind of similarities across borders were found, which kind of transcend, you know, all sorts of things. It was beautiful, beautiful. Loved it.
I'm going to do a little song and then we're going to introduce a new segment, which I haven't told you about.
I haven't. What is this?
It's called What's Your Take? And it's like a 5 minute anything that's on your mind that's bothering you that you don't like, that you love, that you think people should do more of or less of. So I'm going to give you a little time, musical interlude to think about
okay.
it.
Okay. Have you already thought about what your take is?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's a weird one, but.
Oh, okay.
We're going to listen to the Black Pumas, and this is Colours, and we'll see you back in a minute.
All right.
I woke up to the morning sky first. Baby blue, just like we rehearsed. When I get up off this ground, I shake leaves back down to the brown, 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 till I'm clean. Then I walk for I'll be shaded. By a meadow of green, oh, by the mile, I'm headed to town, town, town.
walls or blue skies. We gon' fly, feel alright. We gon'.
Listen to that because you're so busy talking about your hot take.
No, we were both talking about hot takes. I love this idea. How did you come up with this new segment?
Oh, I just saw someone doing it. A guy, I've forgotten his name. He does it on the subway in New York. And what's your hot take?
He goes up to people and asks?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And sometimes they're famous because famous people, when they're trying to be real, catch the subway.
Oh, so cute.
And then it's like your average person. Sometimes they're comedians who've got a lot of hot takes that ultimately lead to a fascinating and hilarious punchline. And sometimes he just talks to ordinary people who have deep and abiding hot takes, like you. What's your hot take,
Lucy? I want to hear yours first.
No, mine's not as good as yours.
No, I think it was. I think you had a couple of hot takes.
It was a light hot take.
Let's go there first.
All right. So if I'm buying a boiled egg, and not that I often buy boiled eggs, but leave them in the shell. Like, you wouldn't sell a banana that was peeled or an orange that was peeled.
Exactly.
Don't peel the egg.
Yeah. It's not something you want to be done on your behalf.
Yeah, because often they've been cooked and the yolk goes a bit grey around the edge, you know, because they've been cooked for shelf longevity, I don't know. But just leave it in the shell.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea of someone touching my egg.
Well, also, like, from the eggs from my hens.
Literally and figuratively.
I think you raise a very important issue, and it's overhandling of foods.
Oh.
You know, it's overhandling, isn't it?
Like, I guess.
It's a basic
egg. That's like peeled. Oh, here's my other hot take.
Yeah.
Peeled red onions. Just leave them in the skins. The peeled red onions at the supermarket that they charge more for and that don't last as long.
Oh.
I want, have you?
Yeah, I know what you mean. The shiny ones.
Yeah. They're peeled. Just leave them in their skins like ordinary onions.
Because it's a protection, isn't it?
Yeah. And let me buy them singly. Do not put them in a bag.
Yeah.
And force me to buy $7 worth of onions when I only want one.
The real distress on your face. It's just, I want to give you a hug.
It's small things.
Yeah, but I mean, they mount up.
It shows you that I'm not focusing on the big things in life like you. What's your hot take?
Well, I can't help. I have for now 3 weeks kept up my intense interest in the Middle East crisis. And it's made me think more broadly, right? Because I'm trying to, obviously I'm not, I'll be honest with you, I'm not interested in going to the far right sources of news. I'm just not. I don't want to consume propaganda. I know that there'll be people out there going, oh, you get that that in the left-leaning news and saying propaganda. Whatever, yeah. Okay, right, but so I'm trying to get my news from as broad as possible. But what I've really, and I hopefully this will transcend all politics, is that as a human race, as a species, we need to get back used to dealing and handling and living with complexity. Complex issues, complex thoughts. Not everything can be reduced to right or wrong. It really can't. And I think that's what I've discovered, kind of taking a deep dive into the whole Middle East crisis, is that there is no, I'm going to use the word untrammeled. I don't think it's the right use of the word, but there is no untrammeled response to this crisis. There is nothing simple about it. If you are struggling to understand the Middle East crisis, that is because it is complex. And you're not going to, hello.
Look, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Somebody thinks they might have left their case in the studio, so I'm just going to ferret about.
What kind of case?
A camera case.
Oh, a camera case. Okay. Yeah,
no, it probably isn't here, but
I cannot see it. I'm not sitting on it.
I've broken your train of thought.
That's all right. No, I wasn't. I was struggling, actually, with my train of thought.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now I'm struggling even more.
God's sake, Michael. Yeah. Untrammeled.
Yeah, so that it is complex. You are, and also, and I know I've said this before, as a species, we should be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. We can hold irrational, you know, things can be right and wrong. They can be right for the wrong reasons. They can be wrong for the right reasons.
Yes, but can I add a coda sill?
Yeah. Oh, we're going to linguistic places.
That when you're feeling frightened or afraid or back to a place where you're not sure where you stand or things are very unsteady, you often revert to black and white thinking or in the CBD cognitive therapy thing is, yes, it's black and white. It goes back to simple. You're looking at things. You just can't see the complexity because it's a frightening situation.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I get comfort from doing that deep dive into the complexity.
Yeah. You don't feel overwhelmed?
No, I don't. And actually,
I guess you're in the right job as a journalist.
I think maybe what, so I was listening to Peter Frankopan yesterday. So he is a well-known scholar. He wrote The Silk Roads. Back in 2015, which really tried to recast global history from a more Middle Eastern perspective, because the colonial enterprise created a somewhat false narrative that Europe and European thinking was at the heart of global development. And it's not. The Middle East, even if you were to think about it from geography and population base alone, has always been far bigger than Europe, always. And so I've not read the book yet, but, you know, that's where I'm going. I listened to him yesterday and I heard him talk really meaningfully. He was also very upfront going, look, and he was on there's a fabulous podcast from The Observer or The Guardian, I think, called The Journalist and the General. And it's a journalist and a general, British, who have both had a long interest in global affairs, both from their perspective, and now they've kind of moved their skill set to this podcast, and they invited Peter Frankopan on to talk about the historical background to the Middle East crisis, not just back to 1979 when Bashar was deposed, but back before then and before then and before then. And I thought, yes, you know, like, we are living in extraordinary complex times when you have politicians, and you know who I'm talking about, who within the space of a sentence can say contradictory things. So we're writing history as we speak. It's getting more complex. And I just find some comfort in thinking this didn't come out of nowhere and this will have an after. I'm not sure what that after looks like. But we can look into history and to historical sources, which, yes, I can hear you already. I know they all have a bias, right? Absolutely. Because human beings are instinctively biased. We can't help it. We're individuals with a brain, right? Live with it. And so But I just take an enormous amount of comfort from reading other people's thoughts. Some I agree with, some I don't. Some just get me thinking. I hadn't even thought about that before. Yeah, you know, I didn't really know anything about the when the Shah was deposed. But I went out there and thought, this seems to be a pivotal moment. That's when the Ayatollah regime kind of came in. I need to know more about that to understand, you know, what people are harking back to, what, and whether that is accurate, you know, like just all the things. Mm. So that's my hot take.
Mm.
But I totally get as well that when we're, when we are in crisis, you know,
I thought you were going to say, and I totally get peeled onions. It's like, oh my God. From one extreme to the other of one person who thinks deeply and one person who can hardly think at all.
I don't know. I think human beings should take a little bit more pleasure and delight in handling complex thoughts and being prepared to go, do you know what? I hadn't thought of that.
Or I don't have an opinion because I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
Yet.
But I'm interested to hear what you say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there are all sorts of ways, or to not have the conversation. But equally, you know, let's not, you know, a Facebook post can be, I tell you, I think what I'm tired of, and I might be guilty of it myself now, but it's just being beaten around the head with an opinion.
Yeah.
I just don't like it.
Yeah.
I like being given information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to crawl back in our holes now and take a little musical break. And that was a great first segment. I think we'll keep doing that because the hot take's good.
I'm going to have better hot takes in the future.
No, that's a great hot take, great hot take. And I've got a question to ask you after we come back from our music break about the coverage of Chris Hipkins and the media and that unwritten wall that seems to be being unwritten about discussing people's, politicians' private lives.
Oh, well.
Okay, we're going to listen to Wilson Pickett and the Land of 1,000 Dancers from the exciting Wilson Pickett. We love him. And we'll see you in a minute.
Brilliant.
One, two, three. One, two, three.
Wilson.
Love that. Yeah, we had a little boogie, didn't we?
We did. We had a little chair boogie. That's just top half only. Mm. nothing moving down below.
No.
No. let's talk about, from a journalist perspective, the news. Well, firstly, the social media post that made an alleged post.
Yes.
Oh, no, the post was real, but what she was saying about him was, you have to say alleged, right?
Yes, yep.
Private post, and then it was removed, but people screenshotted it, and then it went round like wildfire about things that he'd done in the marriage.
Yes.
And then the initial reporting, and he did a, I don't know what you call it, when they front up in front of the media.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Yep.
Yep, thank you. Stand up. Where he was near tears and, with, you know, how that would have affected the standing. But then the next night on the news, this is One News that I was watching, and they continued to report about it and continued to kind of dig into the reasons of why and whether it was thing and how this would affect his.
Yeah.
And then got response from Winston Peters and got response from other members of the coalition.
Yeah.
And I just thought, what's the journalistic principles that used to be, that I had heard mentioned about people not discussing any politician's private life.
Yeah.
And that was always sort of a given.
Yeah, like
the Muldoon Longy days.
Yeah.
And a punter on, I forget who it was and who I heard, where I heard it, but a media punter, probably Radio New Zealand, saying that it was an unwritten rule and, you know, I think he was grew up in the 80s, so he was saying, like, Muldoon and Longy, you would never have heard about their private lives, which I don't think is actually true, because I do recall hearing Longy and his marriage difficulties that was happening, and I remember it being in women's magazines that my mother was reading, and I remember hearing it as a child.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not sure that it's an entirely true principle that people always stuck to, but
yeah.
And what's the take on it?
Well, it's really interesting. I think there has been an awful lot of writing and discussion in our newsroom about it, because it has kind of, it was one of those, ooh, okay, is that what we're doing leading up to the election?
Yeah.
Let's hope not, because life is difficult enough, right? Without, you know, we'd all rather hear about policy. I've sent it to you, but I just, and it really speaks to that point I was making in my hot take, that, you know, this is clearly a messy and complicated process. But now, what is her name? Veronica Schmidt has written what I think is an excellent piece for the spin-off.
Ah.
And she says, and her headline is, "The Jade Paul Chris Hipkins story was messy for a reason." And she unpacks the kind of journalistic kind of tentativeness that she had. I think a lot of journalists are thinking, not quite sure how we tackle this. Social media has meant that these things flare up super quickly.
Hello.
We're live, darling.
Oh, yeah. How are you?
I'm good.
You're good. I'm just getting it out. Well, it's been a day, hasn't it?
It's been a day for interruptions. Sorry.
So, you know, social media means that these things flare up really quickly, and they travel speed faster
very
than the speed
speedily
of journalism, right?
Yeah, faster than speed.
Journalists, good journalists, want to kind of go, okay, this thing is out there. Can't pretend it's not out there.
Don't want to be seen to not be addressing it.
Exactly.
Some takes I've heard.
Yep. So need to reach Jade Paul. She, as far as I'm aware, was unreachable.
Yeah, not in the country.
So let's go, you know, but also need to go and see Chris Hipkins. Let's meet him off a plane and ask him these questions. And again, I think it is that kind of, nobody wants to be seen to be not reporting on it. And you're probably trying to justify it on the way in the car.
Yeah.
You know, how are we going to handle this? What are we going to say? Blah, blah, blah. I think Chris Hipkins also probably had rather good advice around what to say and not to say.
Yeah, I think he handled it, in my personal opinion, very well.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, I think at the heart of Jade Paul's, this is what Veronica Schmidt does so well in her article, is she said, even if we take what little we do know, even unverified, and one of, so my understanding is that the post was under the Jobs Health Homes. She kind of did a critique of the relationship against Labour's, and again, I haven't, unfortunately, weirdly, haven't seen the post myself. But on one of them,
Yes.
Veronica Schmidt raises the fact that when it comes to jobs, spouses of powerful people often have to take a back seat. And in politics, in New Zealand, because we're so small, spouses, if they are also involved in the political sphere, might have to actually leave their job in order for their partner, who is in a position of power, trying to seek more power, more politics, might have to leave their job altogether. And my understanding is that there is some feelings around having to do that. Now, interestingly, and so what Veronica's saying is, as a feminist, I'm like, yeah, Jade Paul, sounds horrible, right? Also, as a part of a journalist pack that probably doesn't want to go down this personal route, but you, Chris Hipkins, what's going on there? You know, like, we're all... Also, if anybody is reading or thinking or reporting and they've gone through their own messy breakup or a divorce or anything, like, you can see, right? Things get complicated quickly. And who on earth would want any of that out in the public domain? So, and then for me as a feminist, when I thought about that one particular issue around spouses having to leave jobs, and I'm not assigning any of that to this particular instance, but it made me think, if there is some resentment out there more globally, yeah, women carry a lot of the load. You know, traditionally, and hopefully we're seeing it change, but, you know, men have been the ones that have, whose rise to power has been much less trammelled. because patriarchy, right? So, again, I think going back to my earlier point, this is not a... And Veronica Schmidt says she was inundated with texts going, shame on Chris Hipkins, shame on Jade Paul, you know, everybody having a shame on kind of response. I might be simplifying, I hope she's not listening. But she said, you know, she was carrying all sorts of difficult emotions, but knowing that it needed to be reported on as it was in the public interest, and that's the big key, is it in the public interest? And the speed of journalism is such that you're often having to make those decisions on the hoof.
Is it? Is it in the public interest, in your opinion, as a reporter, a journalist?
I think, again, you know, how much is my own bias saying, I want to say no, I'm not sure it was in the public interest. I think things getting out of control on social media is not the same as public interest. And how do we be seen to be reporting on things? Like, just because something happened on social media doesn't make it news.
Mm.
Just because somebody had a thought and it leaked and it went beyond. I don't know. It's so hard. And in a way, my brain is kind of like, it's funny. I can tackle the Middle East crisis. I can do a deep dive on that. Mm. I always found this too hard to think about. Because I am worried. I don't want to see more of that happen leading up to the election.
It felt dirty to me and, like, unnecessary and, you know, I'm not interested in any politician's private life. I just want to hear the policies and the things that the government's going to do for us.
Yeah.
And I thought it was distracting and, you know, I don't think it'll affect his standing in the, because I heard other people saying that, you know, female voters will turn off him because of, you know, these alleged allegations against him, and I don't see that happening. I just see it as really distasteful and a private thing that should never have got that far.
Yeah.
And, like, fine, report on it once, but don't keep hashing into it.
Yeah.
But to see it on Prime News ahead of other things that are happening, yes. I'd thought, no way.
Some kind of editorial decisions are being
weird,
made.
Weird, yeah. I just found it
really
weird.
But I do, there is a real FOMO within journalism, I think. Fear of missing out. You do not want to be seen to have not reported on that thing. But it's almost impossible. Unless you're going to deploy AI to mine this stuff for you and come up with some stuff, which is a very dangerous path to go down. We can't keep up with the speed of social media. It's just not...
I mean, asking how your kids are, like, the TVNZ, I've forgotten his name. Who's the TVNZ political reporter? The guy. Anyway, and you know, to say, ask, how are your kids taking it? Or how are your kids? I mean, totally unnecessary.
And then,
and you knew that would provoke an emotional response, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, I just thought the whole thing was gross.
Yeah.
And it could have been anybody, you know? It could have been anyone from any part of the political spectrum. I don't want to know about your personal life.
No. And I think, you know, I think had there been, and there are not, I just want to put this on, you know, firmly, there are no allegations that anybody has done anything wrong in that relationship.
Yeah, like nothing unlawful. Or,
But, you know, and look, we all know our private lives are messy. Mm. Marriages are hard.
Yes.
Yeah, I've always said it's a lot to ask of a person.
Breakups are awful.
Yeah.
And breakups with children are double awful.
Yep.
No.
Yep.
Yeah. No. And I wondered if, I wonder who was advising him and if, like, you know, Jacinda had a call to him because, you know, speaking of, like, free-for-all and dissecting people's lives, I mean, she had it terribly and I just don't know. I just don't see that being in the public interest.
Exactly. Let's look at this in the lens of what happened to Tori Farno, and that lovely Minister for Conservation under the Labour government.
Yes.
You know, and women have come off very badly in instances where their private life and their personal life have kind of blurred into one. And, you know, nobody does well. Nobody does well when we do that.
Yeah.
Why
is it not okay for... This is probably a stupid question now that I think of it. But why is it not okay for the Fourth Estate and journalists in general to say when maybe they've tried to find out stuff, is it okay for them? Why isn't it okay for them to say, I don't know, we're not going to comment on it? Has that ever happened? Like, you can't comment on a private matter without doing some digging that's maybe not particularly tasteful.
Exactly. And again, that public interest.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not prurient interest, you know, like just to give somebody a bit of a tickle.
Because the agreement about the mosque killer and never naming his name, was that an actual court ruling or was that a thing that people collectively decided that we're not going to name him because we don't want to?
I don't believe it was a legal thing. Okay. I think it was more of a collective kind of national response.
And then when someone does do it, which I have seen recently, people naming him, and it's really like shocking when you hear the name and you think, hang on, I thought it was a generally agreed thing that we weren't going to give him that satisfaction, we weren't going to speak about his name again.
Mm.
And then you hear it and it's jarring.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I felt. It was jarring.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're absolutely right. And that's... It's important for us, I think, to collectively reflect on that, right? Because I think, interestingly, we're small enough as a nation as well, even though we you know, cover the vast gamut of opinions and views, but we can, as a society, kind of reflect more collectively on, I'm not sure. I'm quite comfortable with the fact that, generally speaking, news doesn't go there.
Mm.
Nobody wants a Daily Mail kind of response,
knee-jerk
response. I just really want to find something in here from, because Veronica Schmidt has done such a great job, I think. That's it. She said, of course, we view all news stories through the lens of our own experiences, but the Jade Paul, Chris Hipkins story was a doozy because it drew on an emotionally charged Venn diagram with political beliefs, feminism, fairness, privacy and marriage intersecting in a fiery centre.
Mm.
It was uncomfortable for Hipkins and Paul, of course, but also for anyone willing to soul search. And I think that's what we are doing, soul searching. I would hate to have been in the newsroom, in a newsroom which responds to that kind of thing. I would hate to have been in there. I think I would have found it very challenging. I wouldn't want to have rushed up to the airport. No. I'd be quite cowardly and just hope it all went away and maybe go to the toilet while other people got their cameras and microphones and went running off. You know, because...
Yeah.
It made me really think about what I want in my future.
Have you ever said no to stuff, or know of people who've said no? I don't. I wonder how that goes down in a newsroom context of like, no, if you're being told to go and do something and you're feeling like, no, I don't think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, actually, it'd be really interesting to talk to Piers on this issue, because he has some quite firm lines in the sand around some of this stuff. And I'm just trying to think of an example. God, so much has happened, hasn't it, in the last couple of years. Mm. I can't... There was some kind of far right shenanigans. Do you remember when that Polly, was her name?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And when she was on the scene, there was a little bit of local activity.
Right.
And there was, and I really hope I'm not getting this wrong, but there was some local activity, and there was some people were trying to apply some pressure to our newsroom, external to the newsroom,
okay,
to maybe report on things, to amplify
right
what groups affiliated with those views were doing.
Okay.
And I seem to recall we had a good discussion in the newsroom about where we stood on that and what it contributed to, and should we. Also, I think, in a way, we are such a busy little newsroom, and there is so much to cover of far greater public interest, often when some of these gnarly issues come up. You know, again, you can, I'm not saying the cowardly way out, but there are other decisions to be made, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I think Piers would be a great person to talk to on that, because, you know, as a good editor, which he is, has to have, you know, has strong views, you know, they're kind of ballsy, and, you know, this is, and but also open to really good discussions. And we've had some great discussions, and we did have a good discussion yesterday about this. There's been some great discussions in the office about to what extent, when we report on petrol prices, are we contributing to some kind of collective hysteria? Mm-hmm. My view would be, actually, we're probably in danger of underestimating some of the risks we face. And I think that's why it's really important, as a small nation, that if you are interested, go and find some news that's being reported out of America or the Middle East or Britain or Europe, to kind of, they are closer to some of those centres where this stuff is all happening. Gosh, it's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a lot. And it's okay to feel like it's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, nice one. Let's have a little break.
Yeah.
And this is a great song, actually, and it's a good title, because it's called People Everywhere Are Still Alive. It's called Kurubin, or I don't know how I'm pronouncing that, but it's and the album is The Universe Smiles Upon You.
Lovely.
Let's listen to that, and then we'll talk about the local news.
Yeah.
And then we'll have to get off. But here we go. Here's People Everywhere Still Alive.
Thank you.
You can talk now. I say, shh, don't talk. You'll ruin the end.
Oh, I'm good at
that. I need to re-pronounce that. So it's Krungbin. It's a trio of musicians based out of America. One of them's Iranian, one of them's Thai, and one of them's from America. So they're blending all these different, like they've got the tabla in there, and some jangly soul and rock and pop and psychedelic. It's cool.
Very cool. I love that track. Love it.
Right, what's happening on the streets? Trees are getting cut down.
Oh, God, yeah.
God. Pretty gnarly,
isn't it? So on the front page today, though, we have keen to get back on board. Aerodrome could get more government backing to help re-establish regional air services.
Oh, yes.
So the government have made available this $30 million fund to kind of boost. I don't know. It just feels a bit awkward given that we've only got 47 days left of jet fuel in the country. But anyway, it is good news.
Westport's just lost their airport.
They have. And, you know, I heard, I think it was on RNZ, the air service there hadn't put a bid in for this money.
Oh.
So either whatever they could get from the pot wouldn't have been enough.
Right.
Or who knows? Very interesting. I thought that raised more questions than it answered. But the government has signalled it could provide further support for a regional air service from Wairarapa's central airport. This is a Piers story. The minister, regional development minister, Mark Patterson, was at the aerodrome yesterday to mark the $17 million infrastructure upgrade of that little airfield. Well, not so little now. It sounds well flash. So that's interesting news, and these stories always do really well. There's a very keen interest in our little aerodrome. Then there's more coastal community at risk of primary roads. We've got roads and airports. And then Kate did a lovely story on keen volunteers getting the better of predators. We've had it's been...
My neighbour caught a stoat today.
Far out.
Yeah.
In a trap?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how else you'd catch
them. They stink. Have you ever smelt a stoat?
No.
A female, or maybe it was a stoat. Anyway, it was some kind of mustelid.
Oh,
it was rank. It was like musky grossness. It was like shoving it in my face and going, look what I caught. Look what I caught.
And how big was it?
Oh, about that big.
Yep. So what, like a foot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a foot?
I reckon.
No. Isn't a foot a meter?
No.
Okay.
I think he had two feet and a meter.
Like 25. It was like from there to there, and that's 30 centimeters
from your tips of your fingers to your elbow.
Yeah,
and as thick as your arm.
Yeah, thicker than a baby's arm.
No,
is it thicker than a baby's arm? What's that from?
I don't know.
Some movie quote. Oh gosh, the movie. Did you watch the Oscars?
No.
Oh,
did you?
I watched the whole thing.
Far out, Brussels sprout. That's
dedication. To see if anybody was going to say anything remotely, because I remember I watched it with my son and we saw the Will Smith slap.
Oh, did you?
And
what was that like to see?
At first we thought it was a joke or because Chris Rock was on, you know, and a comedian, and everybody's being highly controversial in their comedy these days to get known, and I thought, God, this seems a weird setup, but he's, and I was like, no, God, this is actually happening. It was so weird, and it was so weird.
Odd.
Yeah, so he wasn't there this year. He's been banned he been banned for life?
Oh, I don't know. Or Chris Rock?
No, God, no.
Will Smith?
Will Smith's been banned from the Oscars for maybe for life or maybe a little bit. Until he's seen the error of his ways. Javier Bardem.
Oh, yeah.
Was no war, no Palestine. Had a great
thing.
And Jesse Buckley's acceptance speech was very good. And the cinematographer, who is woman of colour and won, and the first female cinematographer ever. And she gave a fantastic speech. And she was really good.
I haven't been seeing this in my algorithms. I get a lot about the frocks.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a very
fabulous
algorithm as well.
Well, that's fashion critical. If anyone who likes fashion in the red carpet season, I recommend you follow an Australian woman called Fashion Critical.
Oh.
And she makes commentaries on brilliant, so funny, never mean or Australian for Australian red carpets, because often there'll be people that you know or just like people who are going as an average, ordinary person without a stylist. So there's no need to be cruel.
Yeah, yeah.
But then she lets it all hang out for the big, big wigs and the red carpets of Hollywood in that season.
I think Isla's been following that. She's
so funny.
Yeah, she's been enjoying that.
So funny. I do enjoy a good red carpet. So that was fun. And all the multiple changes of frocks during the night.
Is that a thing?
And then you have a frock for the event, then you have a frock for the after party, depending on which after party you go to, whether you got invited to the Oscars.
Wow. I think by the time I'm at the after party, I want my dancing shoes on.
Yeah. So there's a lot of comfort chasing at the after party.
Yeah. You don't want to be in the frock and the heels by then.
No. No. Minis. Lots of people wearing mini skirts.
Oh, really? Are they back in?
And flashing around their Oscars.
Oh.
Yeah. So we started watching The Best Picture.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? The Leonardo DiCaprio film?
Oh, the
I want to say Everything All at Once.
I know, but it isn't that, is it? And One Thing After Another?
Yeah.
Yeah. No? You don't not enjoying it?
Not at all.
Oh dear.
No.
Oh.
I did not like it at all.
Too loud, bangy, crashy, masculine.
No, I just didn't do anything for me. Left me feeling cold, and I haven't watched him in it yet because
I don't want to
as who's my favorite, the film reviewer for Stuff, I've forgotten his name.
Yep. God,
I'm such a terrible host, I keep forgetting everything.
That's all right, I can't remember.
I remember what he said, and he said the more I think about Hamnet, the more I think it's like emotionally manipulative and not an enjoyable film, so I don't think
that's interesting
that.
I have discovered the delight. Sorry, it was a bit of a segue here, but National Theatre live on telly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Jez got the subscription. I think it's like $20, and really, really good. I watched
like theatre.
Yeah,
that's been filmed.
Yeah, so
performances that have been filmed.
Yes, and they're filmed very well.
A live audience.
With a live audience.
Okay.
So I just want to tell you I've only seen one. Jez is addicted, like watching one a night. I've watched The Estate. Jez saw this live in London. No, it's. I'm going to read you The Estate, the play. Hang on.
It's about class wars in England.
Sort
I'm guessing.
Of.
Is it about someone who lives in an estate?
Hang on. Hang on, let me tell you what it is.
What it is.
It's a BAFTA winner, Adil Akhtar. He was just Four Lions, Fool Me Once, as Angad in this razor sharp, it was blistering, in this, I've got to accept the cookies. The leader... Being the favourite comes at a price. The leader of the opposition has been forced to resign in a scandal. Against the odds, Angad Singh emerges as the favourite. He could win. He could make history. He could really change things as long as his sisters keep their mouths shut. It was so compelling.
Why is it called The Estate? I'm still hooked on that.
Do you know what? Because I was surprised it was called The Estate. Because I came up in my head with a whole bunch of titles it could have been.
We're so suggestible.
Yes, yeah, I am. But really, really, really good. The acting was just...
What was the secret? Would that be a spoiler?
Oh, no, I'm not going to tell you. Okay. But it raises things around power, control, sexism, feminism, race, class, gender. But it does it with this incredible wit, amazing acting, incredible set design, brilliant score, just some of the best. Like,
and he saw it live in London.
Yeah, he did, and he wanted to see it again on the telly. And he said he actually got more things out of it when he watched it on the telly.
Okay.
The production values of the televisual stuff is so good.
Okay.
So good. Yeah.
Well, I'm seeing live theatre this weekend. On Sunday, I'm going to the matinee of Speed is Emotional.
Oh, where's that?
In Circa, and it's the play or show put on by Jo Randerson and her family, the award-winning poet and playwright and writer.
Oh, wow.
And, I'm looking forward to it, so I'll report back on that.
Yeah, that sounds very good.
Because it's yeah, it's about a family living with neurodiversity all together, and her family are all in it, and it's it's meant to be brilliant. So.
Yeah. Oh, good on you.
Little theatre, man. I'm going to keep going to theatre.
Yeah, I love a bit of theatre. Yeah. I really do.
And the 39 Steps, which is currently on in Greytown.
Yeah, I think they've been selling out.
Gangbusters, yeah. Going gangbusters with a young cast, a lot of them who attend Kurinui College, and hearing good things about that. So see that before the season's over, which I think is very soon.
Very soon.
Greytown Little Theatre. And what else have you got planned for the weekend, Coach?
I'm on an assignment tomorrow, the Castle Point Races.
Oh.
Never been.
Oh, I've been many times as a child until I was traumatised by a horse dying.
Okay.
Well, maybe they had to kill the horse because it broke its leg.
Okay.
Something bad happened to a horse.
Oh, I hope I won't see that.
Yeah, because it fell on a rock on the beach.
Shit. Okay.
But it's great fun. Yeah. That was bad. I love the little, my favourite thing about it was, they probably don't have it anymore because this was in the 70s. They used to roll up the, it would be on the back of someone's car on a trailer and they'd kind of park it in place. And it was the little booth where you went to place your bet.
Oh, yes.
And they had lovely paper tickets and a little newspaper print book, which had all the names of the horses and you could choose and all the race times.
Oh, wow.
And all that. Yeah. There's something special about it. Yeah. Like it is the whole, the setting and the,
quite quintessential kind of Kiwi experience.
I used to like that word, but that's my other hot take. Real estate agents, stop using the word quintessential in your property listings.
Yeah, that's, I mean, think about how many other words you could put in that space.
Yeah.
But it's quintessential. The word itself is quintessential.
The quintessential New Zealand seaside experience. Is it the only place where they do horse racing on the beach?
Probably not. I don't know. I'll have to find that out.
What's your angle?
I don't know, actually. I'm not even sure what I'm meant to be doing.
Is betting okay?
Betting. Gambling. Yeah, I know. Well, is horse racing okay? I know. Personally, I mean, I grew up with a bit of horse racing. So, I mean, I remember going to Ascot races the day that Frankie Dettori won every single race, and I had placed a bet on him. You know, me think,
okay.
I did quite well that day. I don't know.
We all dressed up?
Yeah, it was ladies' day, so you had to go dressed up. I think I went with my mum and my sister. I've got photos. I was quite young.
God.
Yeah, we had to wear hats.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Then I worked for a planning surveying firm in London in Mayfair, and one of our key clients was Ascot Racecourse.
Oh.
And so one of my colleagues
got season tickets or a box.
Yeah, we did get treated quite well. And my colleague Sally Aird, who was a former ballerina, she wrote the history of Ascot Racecourse.
Ballerina.
Yeah, I don't know how that girl did it. She was had an incredible brain, and she was a really cool lady, very disciplined, as you would be, having had a lifetime on doing ballet. And but she did night after night of all-nighters trying to write this. But I think, I can't remember if it's Methuen, or they had a big publisher. I don't know how she did it. I mean, that kind of stuff, you know, you go away for 6 months in a hole.
She
and
was doing a deep dive on a passionate subject. Was she passionate about it?
I think because it was her job, she had to be.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, we were thinking about it now. We were planning.
Why were you doing that?
Because my bosses at the time were very good at saying, we can do that.
Oh.
It was a classic Catherine Tate. We can do it. And I remember my boss, they were both very enigmatic, charismatic men, but I remember he was Welsh and he said, say, Coops, is you go, yes, we can do that. And you go back to the office and you figure out how you're going to be.
What are you doing? All right. Well, we're going to do that too.
Yes.
We're going to leave you now, but we'll see you again in 2 weeks' time.
Yes.
This has been Hot Waffle, formerly Recuperate, with Katie and Lucy. And you're listening to Arrow FM 92.7. And we wish you a happy day.
Yes.
And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Kitty Arnold.